brought to you by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of audiobooks with more than 150,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature, including fiction, nonfiction, and periodicals. For a free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/bookhype.
Welcome to Book Hype. I'm Jen, and today I'm joined by Kyle, who's been so absent but has finally returned.
Hey.
And Karen, and our special guest, Danielle. So hello, you guys.
Hello.
Hi.
All right. So today we have lots of different things to talk about, but our primary focus is going to be on the Divergent film adaptation. And some cool things, Kyle and Danielle both went to separate red carpets, so we'll have a little inside info from them. And then we'll talk about the adaptation and, you know, what we thought of it as book readers versus what we've seen some non-book readers say. And we'll kind of get into all that fun stuff. So, but first things first, as always, we must talk about what we've been reading. So, Kyle, because you've been absent for so long, I'm sure you've read a bajillion books in your free time.
Oh, yes.
So what have you been reading, my friend?
I've actually, there's this, what's it called? It's like a bunch of short stories.
Like an anthology?
Mm-hmm. And I'm, like, actually, I haven't bought it yet, but it's my next on my list. It's called Bark Stories by Lori Moore, and it has a bunch of stories about, like, death and divorce and, like, aliens and stuff. And
of course it does.
And it's surprised. Just, it's about, like, humanity and how, like, humans, all, like, on all of the stories, it's all about, like, these jaded people kind of that kind of realize that there's more to life than what's happening to them at the moment. And so it looks amazing, and one of the short stories that I'm really excited about is about how to properly apologize to the ghost of a newly dead friend that you failed to visit when she was dying. So I'm excited to read that one.
Okay, that's interesting sounding.
Yeah.
All right. Anything like that. All right, so Karen, how about you?
I started a book called The Great Darkening by R.G. Triplett, and I don't know how I feel about it yet. It's sort of like an epic fantasy. And, I mean, the premise is really interesting. It's about this tree that is on fire but never burns up, so it sort of always kind of gives off this light. And during the day, it's an amber light, and at night, it's a silver light. And so they kind of talk about, instead of, like, the sun rising and setting, they talk about, you know, the amber day and the silver night. And so I really like the idea of it. But these stories, like these sort of epic fantasies, like I have trouble getting into sometimes. So it's a little slow right now. I'm not that far into it, but I'm definitely going to try to get through it and see if by the end it kind of hooks me a little bit more. But I really like the idea, so I'm hoping it does.
Okay, very cool. And how about you, Danielle?
Well, I actually just finished Marvel Civil War. It's like a collection of their 7 Civil War comic books. And something new for me to read because I don't normally read comics, but I had been wanting to read that one. And then I'm about to start, it's actually nonfiction, which is different for me. It's called Heads in Beds, A Reckless Memoir of Hotels, Hustles, and So-Called Hospitality by Jacob Tomsky. And basically, it's sort of like a tell-all and a bunch of funny stories about things that happen in hotels that you've never heard about, or like some of the most outrageous things people have asked for, like the room service, or I don't know. It looks really good, and I'm excited to read it.
See, part of that makes me think, oh yeah, that'd be super cool. And the other part of me, I'm like, I might be a little creeped out.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, it's a fine line right there.
Exactly. So I'm hoping we'll go the fun route and not the I never want to stay in a hotel again route.
Yeah, fingers crossed.
It's supposed to give some tips on, like, if you do this, like that pay-per-view movie will just be dropped from your bill. And I don't know, inside tips on how to get the most out of being in a hotel. I don't know.
Oh, interesting.
It sounds like fun.
Yeah, it definitely sounds cool.
Let's go.
All right. So let's see. I have been reading Well, I've been listening. I've been cheating. I've been listening to Veronica Mars. And it's so good, you guys. I want it to be, like, visual. I now need it, like, on my TV.
Yes!
Or on a big screen. Like, so, and we're going to talk about it a little bit later, because Danielle's finished the whole thing. I know Karen's read it. So, but, like, definitely, I need more Veronica Mars in my life. And I've also been reading, or listening to, I'm on this kick where I'm listening to lots of things. Because I can, like, do schoolwork and listen to a book at the same time. I have a very strange mind that way. And it's called, Half Bad by Sally Green, which is going to be our next book club book. So you should all be reading it, too, because if you want to get in on that. And that's going to be towards the end of the month, because we just did The House of Silk. So we will be doing Half Bad by Sally Green, and it is really cool so far. And the narrator has this amazing British accent. It's so good to listen to. Love it. And that's about witches and kind of the evilness that lies within certain witches and not others, and it's set in England. It's really, really cool so far. So I highly suggest that, and as I said, that
I'm will be... I'm really looking forward to that one.
Yeah, that will be... You will probably like it. It's kind of... It's got some violence to it. Like, just throw it out there. You'll probably enjoy it. Awesome. So that's going to be our end of the month for April book for book club, so keep that in mind. And yeah, that's pretty much all I've been reading lately. I've had a lot of classwork to do, which has not been exciting. So let's move on to our book bite topic of the week. And this book bite is courtesy of Karen. She's been holding on to this one for a while. So the question is, what's the weirdest thing you've used as a bookmark? So Karen, as this was your question, I'm going to throw it to you first. What's the weirdest thing you've used?
Okay, I actually am still using a pair of chopsticks as my bookmark. I don't know why, it was just one of those things where it was nearby. Like, I don't even remember why I had a pair of chopsticks nearby, but I did, and I grabbed them, threw them in a book, and it's kind of been my go-to bookmark lately, so that one's mine.
I love it. How about you, Danielle? Do you have any odd things that you use as bookmarks?
Oh, gosh. It's usually, like, ticket stubs. Either that or when I was in high school, I liked using people's, like, senior pictures that you, like, kind of all hand out to people as sort of trading cards, and I would put those in my books and then try to make people see that they're the ones I'm using as their bookmark and make myself feel special. But other than that...
That's funny. I like it.
I know. It's high school. But yeah, nothing too strange, I don't think.
Kyle, I'm expecting something good. What have you been
doing? So actually I don't use bookmarks generally speaking. I don't know why, I just have a habit of like closing a book and then skimming to the page that I remember. But in high school
Oh boy, this is gonna be good because you can't get it out. Oh yes. Go ahead, tell us.
But in high school, there's this one time where I went to, I think it was like the Trade Alliance there, and they were teaching us how to use condoms on a banana. At the time I was reading a book, and they're like, all right, time for class, and like I just like. It was before I stopped using bookmarks altogether, and I saw a condom on the table, and I was like, oh, well, I mean, okay. And so it was a wrapped condom, but I put it in my book, and it was
amazing.
it was my bookmark for, like, 6 months.
Oh, my God. I can't.
Safety and reading, that is all.
I mean, okay. It came in handy, you know? I mean, like, not, like, I mean, like, no!
Oh, my God!
No! Like, it,
oh,
like,
you're
it was
gonna
just,
have to stop
it,
talking now.
It was just there, you know? I ended up giving it to my friend who needed it one time.
Oh. But, yeah.
That's my life.
Oh, man, I can't.
Jen? What about... Jen.
Yeah, nothing nearly as crazy as Kyle. Oftentimes I'll be reading in like a coffee shop or something like that, so I've used like receipts or straw wrappers or coffee stirrers. Basically, if it's junk and it's lying around, it's ended up as my bookmarker. If it's there, hey, why not? Like Kyle said,
exactly.
Hey, it's there, you know?
Why
except
not?
Except mine are like normal things. So that's kind of, you had no idea, Karen, when you asked that question, that that's what you were going to get.
No.
Yeah. So yeah, so that's pretty much what I do. Like, I've been, like, straws, coffee stirrers, wrappers, receipts, ticket stubs, like Danielle said.
Yeah.
Basically, if it's, like, a scrap of paper or something like that kicking around, it ends up in my book at some point in time.
BookHype is brought to you by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider in audiobooks. For our listeners, Audible is offering a free audiobook to give you a chance to try out their service. One book to consider is the new Veronica Mars novel, $1,000 Tan Line. It's actually read by Kristen Bell, who is Veronica Mars, and it is a fantastic book. I love reading it. In fact, I was listening to it just the other day when I was doing shopping and when I was at the gym working out. The Audible app is really easy to use on your phone or on your iPad or on your computer, wherever you need to use it. It's fantastic. So we highly suggest getting an audiobook from them to try. So for a free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/bookhype. That's audiblepodcast.com/bookhype.
So let's move on to our Divergent movie discussion. Divergent's been up for a couple weeks now. And so let's start with, Danielle, you went first to the Chicago premiere, correct?
I did, yeah.
So why don't you recap that for us and tell us a little bit about your experience in Chicago?
Oh, goodness. Well, the parts that I was, like, most excited about, I feel like they've been blacked out by now because I just can't keep thinking about them anymore. But it was amazing. There were so many fans by the time I got there, and they all had, like, the greatest signs that I've ever seen. I never thought of, like, putting signs as being factionless and asking for tickets, so that was cool. At first, we were only told that it was supposed to be, like, the main four, Veronica, Shailene, Theo, and Ansel, but we ended up getting the girl who played Molly as well because she's from Chicago. So it was really cool to meet her because I think this was the first thing that she had ever done acting-wise, and so she was just as excited as everybody else. So I met her first on the red carpet, and then Veronica came around, and she was just excited about the entire thing. She was excited about the way the movie turned out. We talked about her blog post a little bit, if you caught that on her blog. Talked about Janine and how she likes Janine's portrayal in the movie and kind of wishes that she had done the same thing in the books. Oh my gosh. It's all a blur. The highlight of the night was...
Yeah, give us the highlights.
Yeah, sorry. The highlight of the night was definitely this group of fans who brought Ansel Elgort a cookie cake. And as soon as he got on the red carpet, he, for some reason, heard them scream his name, and he looked over, saw the cookie cake, and I thought he was going to fall down because he was so excited. And so, like, he was just kind of bouncing around the red carpet, and when he got to them, like, he couldn't handle it. It was wonderful. But all of the stars were really excited to meet all the fans, and they were just really excited about the movie in general. So it was amazing.
And you got to high-five Theo James.
I did. That's one of the parts that have, like, blacked out. But I think it happened. I high-fived someone, and I'm almost positive it was Theo James.
Nice.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah, good for me. I was just lucky that I didn't end up just completely on the floor at some point. So well, I stayed on my feet. It's a good thing.
It's always the first movement. You got to stay standing. After that,
standing,
you know.
And awake.
Yep, exactly. All right, Kyle, do you want to tell us about the LA premiere?
The LA premiere was really interesting. I think, Danielle, you got, like, way better, like, interviews and stuff because I was at the end of the carpet at the LA premiere. Like, not the very end, but I felt so bad because the main actors were just kind of like, they, like, I heard Ansel say, it's like, I just want to be inside. And you still had, like, a line of people to interview. And I got him a cookie cake as well. But he didn't come up to me. Like, he didn't come up to me, so I couldn't give it to him. So I ended up giving it to Veronica Roth. And then her agent took it. And then he never posted about it. So I don't think he got it, which is kind of sad. But the interview in general was just, it was the red carpet in general was just, it was really fun. We got to see what's his name, Jaden Smith, Will Smith's son, he was there, and he kept going up and down on the red carpet, and me and the other fan sites were, like, counting how many times he went up and down, and he went, like, like 9 times. He'd be, like, going up and down and up and down. And his friends photobombed a bunch of pictures with celebrities and their fans, so that was interesting. But one thing that Neil Berger said that was really interesting was someone had asked him, why is YA so hot? Like, why, like, these adaptations, the ones that are taking off right now. And he said he thinks it's a safe way to explore female empowerment, and then he wouldn't explain his explanation of that when they asked, oh, really? Like, explain. And then he talked about something else. So that was really interesting. And but it was just awesome. It was really fun. And I snuck into one of the premieres happening down the street at the same time, so that was fun.
Okay, then. All right, so let's talk about the movie now. The movie overall, domestically, because it isn't really in a lot of foreign markets yet, domestically it's made $95 million. So it's made back what was spent on it and then some, which is good considering a lot of the YA adaptations that have been out recently have not been successful. This is the first one that's really been successful out of the gate, which is nice. So there's still hope for more and different things coming from this series. So looking at the movie itself, as an adaptation, did you guys feel it was a quality adaptation? And then as fans of the books, the first thing we judge is what is in and what isn't from the book, I think. Because we know what the material is, and so we want to know, scenes that we thought were important make it into the film, and how does that all kind of play out in the end? Personally, I thought it was a really well-done adaptation. It had what it needed to have to make it successful, and it was still somewhat relatable. I think it may have been a little tricky for some of the non-readers. I'm not sure it is as easy a film to walk into as, say, The Hunger Games. You know, there were some things that were a little bit different, so if you're a non-reader, it might not be as easy to fall into the film. But what did you guys think? So, let's see. Karen, you want to start?
Yeah, sure. I think they did a pretty good job. I mean, obviously, I've read the book, but it's been quite a while, so I'm a little blurry on the details. So, it was definitely, like, I'm familiar with the story, but at the same time, I kind of needed the movie to tell me certain things so I could remember it. And I thought they did a good job there, especially the beginning where we kind of had this info dump of like, okay, here are the factions, here are what they do. I thought they did a really good job of giving us that information, but also making it really visual, like with them in different colors and kind of showing them doing their jobs. It made it really clear what their roles were. But at the same time, it wasn't boring or anything. Like, it was just really cool seeing this world kind of laid out in front of you. And I think a lot of that worked really well because it's Triss's journey from her house to the testing facilities, and she has to go through all this anyway. And it was kind of like a really good narrative, I think, to be able to do that. The movie overall, I really liked it. I mean, I didn't have super high expectations going in, but I had a feeling it was going to be a pretty good movie, and I'm glad it didn't disappoint. I think the acting was really on par, and I like some of the choices that they made, which I'm sure we'll get into in a little bit. But, you know, not totally remembering every little detail that they put that was in the book, I thought the adaptation was pretty solid for the movie.
Danielle?
Yeah, I agree with that. I actually went with two people who had never read the books before. One of them came out and he enjoyed it, and the other one came out so excited about it that she went right home, read the book, and then we went to see the movie again. So I think that it did reach the people who hadn't read the books, and I think it did a good job of explaining itself. I think it had a lot of the same tones and a lot of the same messages as the book had, maybe in a little bit more of a digestible way just because they only had 2 hours to do it. But I think they were spot on with the actors a lot more than a lot of us had thought, especially with Four. I thought that Theo James was fantastic, and I was kind of questioning it going in. Just as an adaptation, I think it hit all of the right marks. Some of the scenes were cut down and I had a few problems with it, but it was more of a nitpicky thing than a movie ruining kind of thing. So overall, yeah, I'm really happy with it.
Okay, Kyle?
Yeah, I definitely agree with both of you gals. As an adaptation, I thought it was really great. It was a really fun movie. I was having a lot of hesitance about Theo James's 4. Mm-hmm. And so when I saw the movie, it made up for it somewhat. Like, he's still not the 4 that I would have preferred, but I did like his portrayal of him, so I thought that was really great. I liked it so much as an adaptation. Like, I thought it did a great job of conveying the story and the feel of the novel. Sometimes when you read a book, like, there's a certain, like, feel and this just... I don't know how to explain it, but there's just something about it that feels very unique, and then it's very hard to translate that into a movie. And so I got the same feeling watching the movie than I did reading the book. So I thought that was great. And I was really upset that Edward's eye stabbing wasn't in the movie. But that's about, like, my only nitpicking thing.
Of course you are.
It's a pretty big thing.
So one of the things that they did do is they added Janine scenes, and which is not shocking when you have an actress like Kate Winslet coming into something like this. You're not going to give her minimal scenes. If you're going to, you know, if there's a place where you're going to add, it's going to be where you have that kind of actress. So I was fine with that. I think that understanding Janine and having more with her in the movie is a little bit more helpful to the storytelling. You kind of get a better sense of who she is and what her point is. So how did you guys feel about that?
I loved
great.
It. Yeah, I think they did a really good job. And, I mean, Janine, in the books, you do get a pretty good sense of how scary and manipulative she is, but I think a lot of that comes in the second book, and so to really set her up in this first one, they kind of needed to do this. And like you said, when you have an actress like this, like, you're going to use her. But I think what they did here was really smart, because it tells you pretty much the first time that you meet her how kind of scary she is and overpowering. I think that's a good word to use, because she kind of towers over everybody and she is really scary. So I'm glad that they added those extra scenes in. And I know a lot of people, at least I went into the movie and, like I said, I didn't remember a whole lot of specifics from the book, but I was like, I'm pretty sure she didn't get stabbed through the hand. Like, right. That didn't happen in the books.
No.
Okay.
But she wasn't even there. There was nobody there but Tristan Ford.
Oh, okay. But I liked it. I thought that it kind of added more to it, and you needed a way to sort of end that conflict. And I think that was just a really good thing to do.
And I think that addition of the scenes kind of helps establish the line where Janine's on one side and Tristan Ford on the other. Like, you get her motives so much more clearly when you see what she's willing to do herself. Like, she wasn't, you know, giving this off to any old minion. She was going to run it herself to make sure it did what she wanted it to do. And I think that clearly defines who Janine is as we move forward in the series. So, let's see. All right, so let's talk. You guys talked a little bit about this earlier, but we can talk a little bit about Theo and Shailene's portrayal of Four and Triss. I know you guys said you were kind of doubtful of Theo James as Four in the beginning. I have to say I wasn't. I've seen him in a couple different things, and I really, really enjoyed him, and I could absolutely see him playing Four. Even though it's an aged-up version of Four, I still thought that he was going to do a fantastic job with it. That's just me. I might be biased. Just throw it out there.
I didn't actually have an opinion on this because I didn't know who he was beforehand, but I thought physically he was pretty much how I imagined the character, just sort of like this big hulking kind of broody figure, and I thought that was a good job. So I went in neutral about his performance. I was like, well, we'll just see what happens. And I thought he was really good. Like, there was a lot of really nuanced things that he did, and I thought he captured this sort of broodiness and strength in the beginning, and then later on, like, a lot more of the vulnerability that you see once he starts establishing a relationship with Triss.
Yeah, I think that's a really good way to describe it. Especially towards, like, once he kind of starts to train her a little bit more, you start to see that the layers that reside underneath and stuff. So, what did you guys think about Shailene? Because there's been so much talk about, you know, Shailene Woodley being the next Jennifer Lawrence and, you know, being the queen of YA adaptation. She does have another one coming out this year in the summer, The Fault in Our Stars. So what did you guys think about her portrayal of Triss?
I really liked it a lot. I thought her portrayal was really great. I think she was definitely way more like Triss than I think Theo was more like for. And just, like, I'm not, like, a huge, like, Shailene Woodley fan. Like, I know, like, there's some people who are like, Shailene Woodley, oh my goodness, I love everything. But, like, I'm more indifferent to, like, Shailene. And, like, if she's in something, then I'm not going to be like, oh, boo, or like, oh, yay. But, like, I'll watch it and be like, okay, that was good. So that's what I went into this thinking. And I was like, okay, I'll see how she does. And I think she did a really solid job at portraying Triss, especially in the scenes where she was with her mother and she was looking at the mirror, and I thought that was just, that was a great. So I really liked her a lot.
Yeah, I think she was good as Triss. I wish we would have gotten maybe a little bit more nuance with her character, because she did embody a lot of Triss's characteristics, but I feel like I didn't get taken there all the way as I have been with Jennifer Lawrence and Katniss. But I still think she did a very solid job, and I'm excited to see her in this next movie where she has to show a lot more emotion, or, well, she has to hide it and kind of become a sort of different person. So, yeah, I think she did a good job.
I'm really hesitant to compare her to Jennifer Lawrence. Like,
yeah, that's true. Mm-hmm.
I don't know if she's really going to be at that level. I mean, maybe she will eventually, but for me, it's just hard to kind of compare the two. But that being said, I really loved her in this movie. I've never seen anything that she's in before. I had no biases. I know a lot of people really didn't sort of like her on principle because of some of the past things that she's done. I had none of that. So I went in totally fresh and new, not really knowing what I was going to get. And I was really impressed, because I think that she's a great actress, and I think her portrayal of Triss showed the strength that the character has, but also the vulnerability, and yet, like, one didn't take away from the other. She wasn't this sort of, like, flop of a character that was always crying or something, but she wasn't unemotional either. And I think Triss in the books, like, you can really tell that, like, she's got those two sides of her, and she is a strong character, but at the same time she has a lot of fears and she has a lot of emotion, and that can be kind of difficult when you're not inside the character's head, when you have to kind of show all of that on your face. And I think Shailene did a really wonderful job showing that.
Yeah, I'm not 100% sure how I feel about her. There were times I thought, like, overall, I think she did a really good job with it, because if she didn't, people wouldn't be enjoying the movie as much. But there are certain things about her that I can't, like, reconcile with the character. So, I don't know. It's kind of iffy for me on her. I guess we'll see moving forward how that kind of plays out, because I'm just, I don't know. And maybe I have seen her in other things, and I felt like some of this portrayal of Triss was similar to some of the other things that she's done. So, I mean, I don't know. We'll have to see moving forward. We'll have to see what maybe The Fault in Our Stars brings, and if it's going to be different enough from what she just did in Divergent.
It's because she didn't have blonde hair, isn't it?
Yeah, no, I couldn't care less.
Totally what it was.
Obviously, it's all about the blonde hair. No, I have no idea.
For anybody wondering, yeah. Ariana wrote this amazing article on Hypebol about how she doesn't know anything about Divergent, and yet, like, here are all the things that she's learned from angry internet comments. A lot of it had to do with Shailene not having blonde hair, and it's, we'll put it in the show notes because it is so funny. I was dying when I was reading it.
And it totally speaks to how fans react to, like, casting.
Yeah.
They don't look like them. They don't, like, it's, and we've all done it. Every single one of us have seen someone, I'm like, no, just yeah. now. So, I think we've all been there. The last thing is the future of the series. As I don't know if everyone knows, but after the midnight showings on the Thursday, they made basically $5 million, and Summit greenlit Insurgent. So Insurgent will be made. As I said, they've already made $95 million, and that's only domestic. That doesn't have anything to do with any of the foreign box offices yet. So once that kind of hits, it'll be interesting to see what kind of money it makes as it continues to move forward. But it did really well. This is the first YA adaptation that's come out in a very long time that's actually made a significant amount of money. So that's pretty impressive, because everything else that's come out that should have done really well, didn't. So this is a move in the right direction for YA adaptations. Something really, really interesting about all of this, currently the biggest YA adaptations are coming from the same company. Mm-hmm. You have The Hunger Games and you have Divergent, and they're both coming out of Summit Lionsgate. Originally, Summit had the rights for Divergent since right before it even came out, I think, as a published novel. And then when Summit and Lionsgate merged, because Lionsgate had The Hunger Games, they now own some of the largest franchises in YA currently. And they did at the time because Summit owned Twilight and Hunger Games was just starting to come out. So they have profited very well from young adult fiction being adapted. So it'll be interesting to see what moves forward from this, if other YA adaptations move forward. The trend we're seeing right now for YA adaptations, a lot of it, is it's now moving into contemporary fiction. So we'll have The Fault in Our Stars, we'll have If I Stay, which is from Gail Forman, and then, as many of us know, the newest news is that they've optioned John Green's Paper Towns, which is also contemporary. So I'm wondering if it's going to move away from the high-budget, kind of dystopian, paranormal adaptations, which cost a lot of money. They have a high ticket price because they need a lot of effects, you know, and move into contemporary, which doesn't cost as much but could still earn you the same amount at the box office.
I hope not. I hope that doesn't happen. I don't have any issues with, like, contemporary novels or movies, and I'm really looking forward to The Fault in Our Stars, but I think, just in general, fantasy, especially dystopian right now, has such a hold on everybody, and maybe it would be good to sort of, like, share that space a little bit, but I hope they don't kind of move in a whole new direction, because I think there's still a lot to be done. I mean, Divergent kind of speaks to that, you know. I mean, we've had Hunger Games and we've had other dystopian stuff come out, and yet this is still doing really well. So hopefully they don't completely drop that. I think there's still a lot more to say there.
Yeah, I think it's going to depend on the topics within the books, too, that they have that are, you know, on option. There's a lot out there right now that's optioned, because at one point in time, every time a book was coming out, it was being optioned. So, I mean, there is a lot out there. Legend is another one I believe is already optioned, and that's by Marie Lu. And that has a lot of potential because it's similar. It kind of falls a little bit into, like, the divergent aspects of it. It's in a city. It's in modern day, or it's in future Los Angeles, and it's a really interesting story. So I think that one has a lot of potential. Another one that has potential because it's very, got the vibe a little bit of Game of Thrones, and that's Leigh Bardugo's Gersha trilogy, I think that's how you say it, and that's really cool as well. And the other one that's optioned that's like high fantasy, so it's going to have a much bigger budget attached to it, is The Daughter of Smoke and Bone by Lainey Taylor. But it would be, if they put this on the screen, it will be magnificent. Because the visual, the writing in those novels is so stunning. And it's just so cool. So, but there's, like I said, that's a really heavy effects, I think. It would have to be a heavy effects kind of movie.
So Speaking of, like, a translation, I mean, I don't know if all of you guys have read Insurgent. Jen, I know at least you have. But, I didn't particularly enjoy the book, and yet I'm still really looking forward to the movie. I'm hoping that it kind of picks it up and makes it more action-heavy and more exciting. But do you think that given what I think is a pretty big difference between Divergent and Insurgent. Do you think the second movie is going to be as successful as the first?
I think it has the potential to almost be maybe more successful. Just because in terms of, like, money-wise, they're not going to have to spend as much money on I mean, this might be wrong. I don't know. Like I feel like they wouldn't have to necessarily spend as much money on set building and, like, doing all the dystopian stuff, because it's more in Amity Fields and greenhouses and stuff, and so they can save money doing that. And I feel like Insurgent is just more action-based, definitely, and I feel because of that, people don't necessarily have to worry about understanding or developing, like, this is a faction, this is Divergent, this is, like, all this stuff. So, like, maybe more people are going to go see Insurgent, maybe not even having seen Divergent, and being like, oh, I really like that. I think I'll see the first movie. Like, did that make any sense, or is that rant?
No, I think it makes sense. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but I have a feeling, like, sequels and stuff tend to do as well, if not better, than the first ones in these cases, just because you kind of have that built-in audience. I mean, when you put out Divergent, like, you have the people who have read the books, but you're trying to get, like, a new audience as well, and you would assume that by the time Insurgent comes out, a lot of people have gotten, you know, have seen the hype around Divergent and sort of gotten into the books or maybe even just the movie, and so all those people are already going to be there for Insurgent.
Yeah. Here's the thing that makes me worried. So now, yes, you have your built-in fan base. Your built-in fan base already knows what happens in Allegiant. You get this new fan base, which they're clearly pulling in because it's making a really significant amount of money, whereas, you know, the other adaptations that have the built-in fan base, they didn't even show up, so, like, no one went. This one, clearly, they showed up, and they brought people who have never seen it with them before. The books have been riding on Amazon's and on the New York Times bestselling list pretty high. Like, for Amazon, for the whole first week of release, they were 1, 2, and 3. So they were being purchased people are getting into the books, which is awesome. But what happens? Great, they saw Divergent, they really liked it, they picked up the books to see what they were about. What happens when they get to Allegiant? That's my only concern for the new audience that has been introduced. If they now go and read the books, they're going to know what happens in the end, and so many people were so angry about that. I don't know how that reconciles with a fan base or with new people coming into it and how they're going to feel about it. That's my only concern.
Yeah, I think that's a good point.
Yeah, but I also, what was that statistic? I think it was like 50% of the people who saw the film hadn't read the book before. And I think a lot of those people are probably around our age, but I don't know about you, but in my theater, when I went not on the premiere date, there were actually a lot of, like, maybe 30, mid-30s, late-30s people in the theater as well, and a lot of men, and not to be stereotypical or anything, but I'm not sure if maybe they would pick up the books. I feel like they would probably just watch the movies. And so if it gains a lot of traction with word of mouth, I don't know. I don't know if I could see maybe a huge dip in numbers by the time we get to Insurgent or Allegiant.
Yeah.
I don't know.
No, I agree.
Does that make sense?
The interesting part about when I went to see it, I went on, like, a Sunday afternoon, and I was actually quite surprised at how many people that were significantly older. I'm talking, like, 50s and 60s in the theater. It was a matinee on a Sunday, and I was like, whoa. So that right there is the difference between, like, you know, Beautiful Creatures and City of Bones and Vampire Academy. Those theaters did not have that demo in it. This theater did. And I think that's the case, and that's why, you know, people haven't read it, but they felt a connection to The Hunger Games or to some other, you know, movie, and they saw that in Divergent, and that's why they went. And so that's a huge boost for them. So, yeah. I mean, I don't know if it will play a factor in it, but it was such a, like, shocking and polarizing thing within the fandom itself that it does raise a concern. So I don't know. We'll see how that plays out over time. But I think it'll do fine. I really do. I mean, it's done really well opening weekend, which is again, it's one of the first ones in a long time to be so successful, so let's hope it keeps kind of doing all that.
Also, I just want to say, I know, like, you guys were hoping that less, like, fantasy-type, like, adaptations kind of, or, like, maybe, like, you didn't say, like...
We weren't hoping. I'm like, just saying, it's an observation.
Like, yeah, like you, I'm actually, like, really looking forward to, all the contemporary novels being adapted, and, I actually wouldn't mind it a bit if they kind of took the spotlight away from all the, like, the fantasy and, like, all the other stuff, like, the dystopian stuff, just because I feel like, there's so many amazing contemporary novels out there, not just John Green novels, but, like, just in general. And I feel like just in this world, everything's, like, a sequel. And, like, everything that's not a sequel is, like, a dystopian or a young adult novel that's being adapted. And I feel like we need more contemporary young adult novels to be adapted, just because I feel like they should get their time in the spotlight, in the limelight. So I'm actually really looking forward to Paper Towns and, like, all the other novels that might get adapted.
See, here's the thing with that. The reason contemporary typically don't get adapted is because they don't have the potential to become a franchise. So you've got a one-off that'll make you money, but what do you do next? So in the case of John Green, and it was just super funny because about 2 years ago, I wrote an article about the next big YA franchises. And I said that John Green would become his own franchise because that's the only way that functions, because he only writes standalone novels, but he has a massive fan base. He has a lot of YouTube connection. Like, he's got a lot going. So now that The Fault in Our Stars is receiving tons of attention, like, I think the trailer hit 2 million views within a couple of hours. So because of all of that, they've optioned another book by John Green. Do you know what I mean? And I think that that's what they'll do for him, because he doesn't have a series of books, but he will become his own franchise. A lot like Nicholas Sparks is his own franchise. He doesn't have books that connect in a series, but his standalone books have all become movies. And for the most part, they've all been pretty successful. So it's kind of the author recognition is the franchise, not the novelization, yeah, of the series itself. But the problem with many contemporary novels is that they're not all authored by John Green, or they don't all have a lot of, the author may only have a couple of books out. So it has a different appeal to be optioned and to be made into a movie than other things might, because it's harder to build off of that.
And yeah, that makes sense.
Movie companies are always looking to build. If you've got a moneymaker, you want multiple moneymakers from the same person, because you know that it's going to be money in the bank kind of thing. Do you know what I mean? Like, that's typically the thought process behind it. So I don't know what that's going to look like for others. Like, Gail Forman has another, like, she has a duology. So if I stayed as well, she has this other duology that's this really cool kind of setup. So that could work. But I don't know, you know. And, I mean, the other one that could foreseeably be made into a movie is Eleanor and Park by Rainbow Rowell. And if that got made, then, you know, Fangirl is obviously what you're going to look at next. You know, and that has a huge appeal to a lot of people. So, again, but not all authors have those things built in.
I think that makes a lot of sense, but I still don't agree with it. And I'm sure you guys don't either, because I really miss having quality, like, standalone movies. Like, one movie, it's a story from start to finish, and it's beautiful and amazing, and you're just done. And I get it from a business point of view. Like, of course, if you can cash in on somebody or a series, like, obviously that's a good thing to do if you're out to make money. But at the same time, I love the idea of maybe moving into this sort of era where single movies are going to start becoming more of the norm. And I think something that would be really amazing, instead of doing the either or, like, instead of having just all these fantasy series or just the contemporary standalones, like, if we can just kind of continue to do both at the same time. I think they both have their pros and cons, and hopefully, you know how you can kind of see like, for a long time, and still sort of, we still have it. We've had, like, the reboots in the fairy tales and stuff, the twisted fairy tales, and all the superhero movies. Things kind of move in, like, eras. And while I don't mind that, I think it'd be nice to sort of get, you know, certain things at the same time and kind of keep all these fantasy series that are obviously doing well and have a lot of potential and that people like a lot, but also start moving into the contemporary stuff where people can get a single movie that's just sort of beautifully written and shot and can enjoy both at the same time.
Yeah, unfortunately, it seems to be it's all about the money sometimes.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, because I definitely, you know, I don't have a lot of feelings one way or another. Like, I want books to be made into movies, especially if it's going to expose larger audiences to some really great books. But at the same time, it's all about how it plays out money-wise for a movie company. So, unfortunately, it's all about the business. So we'll see how it plays out and have to keep an eye on it over time and check back in on that. But speaking of series, Karen, do you want to talk about that one? Because I know this one is near and dear to your heart, Karen.
Yeah, like only mine. So there's not going to be any more Percy Jackson movies, apparently. I mean, there's, like, no definite official word yet from, like, the company or anything, but Logan Lerman, who plays Percy Jackson, basically said there isn't going to be a third movie. And I think a lot of fans are sort of grateful because they didn't particularly like the first two. I mean, and as far as adaptation goes, they really weren't the greatest. But sort of like you were just saying, I mean, those movies expose more people to the books. And I love the books. They're one of my favorite series of all times. And so I think it's sad that we're not going to be getting any more. And I hate seeing things go unfinished. You know, I mean, there were 5 books in the original series, and we've only gotten 2 movies. So it's kind of a bummer. And there were a lot of really cool things that were going to happen in the third movie that we're just not going to get now. So it's a bit of a disappointment, but what are you going to do? I mean, you can't really argue with the numbers. It didn't do the greatest, so I think it's kind of a miracle in and of itself that it got a second movie.
Yeah, I was quite surprised it got a second movie, I'm not going to lie. Because the first one just didn't, the reaction was so violent to it.
I mean, the first one was so bad.
And the fact that the author, like, will have nothing to do with them says a lot.
Yeah, that's not a good sign.
But, you know, I think that's unfortunate. I mean, I said this on Twitter, but I think that if maybe he had gotten a little more involved and had kind of put his name behind the movies, people would have been more receptive of it. But at the same time, you really can't blame him for that. I mean, his job is to write books, not write screenplays, and kind of put his muscle behind the movies. But it would have been nice, I think, to see a little more cooperation there.
I'm not sure exactly what his level of involvement was, though. To be honest, most of the time when your book is optioned, you have no say. You've signed it away. So you're the fact that, like, J.K. Rowling and Suzanne Collins and Stephanie Meyer were so involved in everything is shocking. And, like, James Dashner has been very involved, and John Green's clearly very involved, but that's not the norm. That's not the norm in any way. So he may not have been invited to be involved. He may not have wanted to be. You don't really know what that whole picture was. I just know I've seen it in print where he's been like, I want nothing to do with it anymore. So,
do you think that – I'm sorry.
No, well, I just – you know, maybe he wasn't invited, and because of that, and then what they did with it, he didn't want to ever deal with it kind of thing because he wasn't asked for his input. I mean, I don't know. I honestly don't. So it just depends how that really played out.
Do you think that I feel like maybe this just might be me and the way I see things in my uneducated way, but I think maybe movie networks and companies and stuff are starting to realize that if you involve the author, then you're going to get a more successful, not only like maybe like a better adaptation of the movie, of the book itself, but like also the fans of the books are going to be more likely to go, because then you have the author promoting the movie is way more than if Rick Riordan never promoted his movies, I don't think, right, Karen?
No, he quite the opposite.
So if I think either they need to start realizing this or maybe they already have, but once you get an author to work with you with the book, not only do you have a better end product in general, but you also have a bigger fan base to come see the movie. So maybe because of all of this, like, John Green being so involved and J.K. Rowling being so involved, and, like, I know J.K. Rowling and Stephanie Meyer were, like, it was really rare for them at the time, but maybe now they're starting to see, oh, well, if we actually work with this author, then we might actually get a better deal out of this.
But,
like, yeah, I think it adds also, like, a level of authenticity. Like, it makes the movie seem more genuine. Because when I go through and watch Warm Bodies on repeat, like, I'll watch the special features of it, too, and it seems like they just bring in Isaac Marion as kind of like hey, it was his book, so good for him, but you can tell that they didn't use him. And so I think when they actually involve the authors, I feel a lot better about it, and I get more interested in it because they're bringing the world to a different medium instead of just kind of, like, stealing it away, sort of, I guess. Yeah.
But, like, in cases of, like, The Vampire Academy and City of Bones, authors were very much proactive in getting the fan base behind it. There was a lot of rallying around it, and it still did poorly. So I'm not really sure where that line is and what makes it work. I can tell you that the same producer is on three of the films that are Whit Godfrey worked on Twilight, he's worked on The Fault in Our Stars, and he's worked on The Maze Runner. He clearly knows the secret of getting an author involved and how to make that work. And how to make it function.
Yeah, Maze Runner. That makes me excited.
Do you know what I mean? Like, clearly there's something about what he's doing that's working.
Yeah.
So I guess we'll see when Maze Runner and The Fault in Our Stars come out how it kind of works. But I'm willing to bet that they're going to do well. I don't know. Definitely. I just have a feeling about it.
But I have the same feeling.
Yeah. And it's not wishful thinking. Like, I really think there's something there that's going to, you know, wow people over and bring people to the theater to see those films. So, I mean, I don't know. We'll see. We'll see when that happens and how it plays out. So I don't know what the right recipe is to make that work as you're adapting. I don't know. We'll see if Godfrey knows the secret or not. And so let's talk a little bit about the Veronica Mars book. Because, Danielle, you had finished it. Karen, did you finish it too?
Yes.
Oh, I'm the only one behind. I'm the only one. So remember, I told you where I was in the book, so please don't ruin it for me.
No spoilers.
No spoilers here.
No comment. I'll just continue my story.
But I don't know if I can explain how much I'm listening to it, and it is the best thing ever, because Kristen Bell is narrating it, and it's so good, you guys. Like, as I told these guys earlier, today I went grocery shopping, and I literally, like, had my my earbuds in as I was, like, walking around the grocery store so I could listen to it, and it was just so much fun. Like, I love Kristen Bell as the narrator. You actually have Veronica Mars talking to you and telling you the story, and I would give anything to see that on a TV screen, on a movie screen. It's just so good so far. I love it. So what do you guys think?
I really enjoyed it. I was so happy. I read it so fast, not because I had to, but just because it was such an easy read. When I was reading it, it felt like I was watching it. That's just how much the words jumped off the page and how 3D the characters were. When one of my favorite characters came in, I laughed out loud at every single thing that he said, like I normally would while watching the show.
I know who you're talking about.
I'm horrible at this because I love him so much. But I thought it was great. I mean, I thought towards the end, the mystery was kind of lacking a little bit. But I really enjoyed what they did with bringing in past characters or kind of name dropping and just kind of bringing you back to the world of Neptune. It was fun.
Yeah, I mean, oh, it was so good. And I mean, Danielle, if anybody's listened to Rewatchable, Danielle was one of our super fans on there. So, like, she's been really invested in Veronica Mars for a couple of years now. And I was one of the newbies. So, although I really like Veronica Mars, I haven't had that sort of, like, history with it. And yet, I absolutely love this book. It's one of the best books I've read so far this year for a lot of different reasons. One, because I am listening to the audiobook, and like Jen was saying, Kristen Bell is just incredible. Oh my God. It's so, yeah, it's so good. I'm really obsessed with her now, like her singing voice and just all of her accents and stuff. She's just so good. Yeah. Success. But not only that, like, for one, it felt like an episode of Veronica Mars. Everything, and that happens when you have Rob Thomas, you know, as the co-author, but it felt really genuine to everything that we had already seen, and yet at the same time, it was just a really quality book. Like, the writing was really well done, and the twists were really good, and the words that were chosen were wonderful, and it definitely kept you, well, in some cases, turning the page. It kept me listening, not pausing. So I really, really enjoyed it, and I think that if you have seen enough of Veronica Mars to kind of know who the characters are and stuff. I mean, they explain it all anyway, but if you're not like a super fan or really into Veronica Mars, I still think you would really enjoy this book.
Yeah, what I love about it is if you've seen the film, and if you haven't, you kind of need to go out and get it because it's awesome. So good. It picks up right kind of where we've left off in the film. So it's just this move forward in Veronica's life as an adult. So, you know, we watched teenage Veronica on TV for 3 years, and now we got grown-up Veronica on the big screen, and now we have this book, which is so good. And I love the fact that it kind of picks up in Veronica's, you know, Veronica's still Veronica in a lot of ways, but she's a little bit more adult. And, you know, you have Mac, and you have everybody there, and it's just so, I don't know, I love Veronica Mars when it was on TV, so, like, this is just, like, in the candy store for me. I'm so, like, so excited to have more of it, because I think it's so much fun. And even though you say the mystery is kind of lacking towards the end and stuff, the reality of it is, Veronica Mars was never always about the mysteries.
Exactly,
it's about the people. It's a very character-driven storyline. Like, that, it's all about Veronica and her friends and who they are and how they change and grow or don't change, and that kind of thing. So that's why I love it so much, because it's really about the people. The mysteries are just a fun bonus. So I don't know. So if you guys haven't read Veronica Mars or seen the movie, you need to get on that. It's so good. And I can't recommend the audiobook enough.
I think I'll go watch the movie now.
We're going to need notes.
I know nothing. I'm the Jon Snow of Veronica Mars. I just don't know anything about anything.
That's really okay. I took a friend who knows nothing about pop culture in general. Like, he knows nothing about Full House. He didn't know who Mr. Feeny was. Like, nothing. And I took him to see Veronica Mars, and he loved it. He absolutely loved it. He knew nothing about Veronica Mars, nothing about any of the maybe jokes that they talked about with pop culture, so...
Okay.
I think you'll enjoy it.
Like, it's, all right. It's really, like, my grandma watched it. And she loved it. So, she had nothing to watch when I was like, here, let me pull up this, because I bought it digitally. Like, I went to see it at a theater, and then I bought it digitally. So, I pulled it up so she could watch it. She totally loved it. She thought it was funny.
Yeah.
Okay. I'll go check it out then.
Danielle, I know you were telling me that there's going to be a second Veronica Mars book later this year. Do we know anything about that yet?
Not that we have been made aware of. I do know that the plan is to have a second novel out by the end of the year. It's currently being written, but nothing has been said about it. I'm not sure if this was supposed to be like a two-part sort of series or if they're just going to keep going with Veronica Mars in general, but right now Rob Thomas is working on iZombie, so he hasn't really updated us on Kickstarter emails that much yet, but there should be another book by the end of the year, long story short.
Makes me so excited.
I know.
I'm hoping for more... Great. Movie, TV, something, anything, Netflix, pick it up, someone.
Yeah. Well, he was saying at some point that he would love it to be like James Bond, where they just keep pumping out movies like every year. And I'm like, I'm so on board with that.
Sign me up. I think that would be amazing. So let's hope. Fingers crossed.
Oh, yes.
All right, Karen, you want to talk about the Maze Runner trailer? Because I know you've been dying. I saved it to last just for you. Go.
Oh, thank you. Okay. Yes, Maze Runner, I think, looks amazing. I think I said this on the podcast before, not a giant fan of the books. Well, I've only read the first book so far. It was good, but it just didn't really hook me as much as I thought it would have. But yes. I think...
I feel the same way.
Me too.
Oh, good. Okay, yeah, good. Yeah. Yeah, okay. But the trailer, yeah, I think, like, it's... 10-15 minutes. The book is very visual, and I think it's going to translate really, really well into a movie. And the cast, I mean, not just Dylan O'Brien. You guys know how I feel about him. But everybody in general looks really good. And, like, they're all really good friends now, so I think they're going to have great chemistry on screen. And I'm really, really, really looking forward to this movie. And I hope that it ends up doing really well so we can get the rest of the books adapted, too.
Oh, man, I'm so excited. We talked about this on Hype the other day, but the trailer just looks so fantastic. And there are a couple changes that you can tell that, like, blatantly obvious from the book in the trailer regarding this one character. And I love it. I love that they changed it. And so I'm just really excited. And it's just going to be amazing.
The end of the trailer where he, like, tries to get through the maze is
closing.
Like, oh, my goodness.
Yeah. Like, I've watched the trailer 10 times, and every time I hold my breath because it's so scary.
I know. It looks like Dylan O'Brien's going to be squished.
Yes. Oh, man.
I don't want to live in a world where that happens.
I know.
Oh, Aaron. Oh, you make me laugh. No, we talked about this last week, too. I really think that has a lot to offer. And if you ever, like, if you've read the book, you know, it reads very visually. Like, it lends itself to be adapted really well. So I think that was an easy, you know, task to do in some cases, because it was very visually available to do that with. Whereas sometimes you're like, what do you mean by that? Like, how am I going to make that and put it on a screen? Where this was a much easier transition, I think. So I'm excited. I really like the trailer. And like I said, we had seen footage at Comic-Con. Kristen and I had gone to the Maze Runner panel at Comic-Con. It was at Nerdist HQ. And it was really cool because they had showed some footage to that. And some of it's now, like, completed with CGI and stuff, and that's what's in the trailer. So I'm really excited to see what they put forth in September. Because originally that film was supposed to come out on Valentine's Day.
Mm-hmm.
And they bumped it.
Yeah. I was really confused. I was like, yeah. Well, isn't this supposed to come out? I haven't seen a trailer for it yet.
Yeah,
and
no,
I was so
they totally bumped it, and I think that was absolutely the right thing to do.
I agree.
I mean, I was really disappointed at first because I just wanted to see it, but this way it gives them lots of time to really kind of touch up the movie, make sure it's the best that it can be, and do a lot of marketing. I mean, marketing is really important to kind of draw in those new audiences who aren't already familiar with the books. So hopefully that'll give them the time to do that, and it'll end up being, you know, pretty popular.
What it also does by pushing it to September, they can also now go take it to Comic-Con and appeal to an audience that they might not have had before.
So excited.
Yes, please.
So jealous.
Okay, right? Let's do
sign
this.
Me up. I can give Dylan my bookmark.
Oh my gosh. Anyway.
Oh.
Yes, yes, you can.
I'm a little afraid right now. I can see us trying to bail Kyle out already. It's not going to be pretty. Be like, Andrew, make sure you put some bail money away for Kyle when we get there. It's important. Okay. Well, as always, thank you guys for listening to Book Hype. As you can always let us know your comments, questions, concerns, thoughts. Answer our Book Bites question, please. If someone's got something better than Kyle, I'm dying to hear about it. You can leave that in the comments of the post, or you can always tweet us, you know the deal, at Book Hype. So thank you guys for listening as always, and thank you, Danielle, for coming on and talking to us about Divergent and Veronica Mars.
Oh my gosh, thank you for having me. I love being here. I love Book Hype.